You're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. I'm Joe Noga. Paul Hoynes has the morning off, and so I'm going to be taking you through this recap of Thursday's big win for the Guardians, 8-4 over the Oakland Athletics. The Guardians raised their record to 27-26 overall. It's the first time they've been over 500 since May 9th. So a month of struggling to get back to that 500 mark and get over the hump. They finally do it in comeback fashion. It was an exciting game that saw the Athletics take the lead. The Guardians tied it on two home runs, back-to-back home runs in the fourth inning by Jose Ramirez and Josh Naylor. Ramirez, you know, just once again, proving that, you know, whenever the Guardians need a big hit and need a rally to start, it usually goes through Jose. Got the team on the board with a solo home run leading off the fourth, his team high 15th of the season. He's 4-for-15 with a double, two home runs, four RBIs, and five walks against Oakland this season. He also drew his fifth intentional walk of the season. We had mentioned last week, the week before, that it was kind of weird that with the sort of youth and inexperience in Cleveland's lineup, that Ramirez didn't have any intentional walks up until that point. And then Kansas City sort of got the message and intentionally walked him in his first two at-bats in a game a couple weeks ago. Now he's up to five intentional walks already this season, after he was issued another one in the game on Thursday night. That's tied with Toronto's Vlad Guerrero Jr. and the Angels' Shohei Ohtani for the most in the American League in terms of intentional walks. Naylor came up after him, launched a home run two pitches later, and it was the first time the Guardians hit back-to-back home runs in a game since Owen Miller and Austin Hedges went back-to-back July 31st of 2021 at Chicago against the White Sox. Naylor now has reached base in nine of his last 10 games, and he's got a .310 on-base percentage in those last 10 games. So Naylor finding ways not just to sort of hit the ball, but to drive the ball and get on base as well. But really the story of this ball game, was the young outfielders for, Cleveland, all three of them actually contributing in big ways. Significantly, Oscar Gonzalez 4-for-4 with a double and an RBI. Gonzalez gets his first four hit game of his career. He's only played in 13 games. It's hard to believe. It seems like he's really got a feel for being out there. In those 13 games, he has hits in 12 of them. He has multiple hits in seven of those games, seven multi-hit games in his first 13. That is one behind Mark Lewis in terms of a franchise high. Mark Lewis in 1991 had eight games in 1991 where he had hits in his first 13, multiple hits in his first 13. So, you know, just impressive the run, the ability of Gonzalez to come up. He's only struck out six times, and he's walked once. But Terry Francona said after the game, you know, they told Gonzalez when he came up, hey, you know, come up and swing the bat. We're not looking for you to walk. We're looking for you to try and put as many good swings on as many good pitches as you can hit. And so far, Gonzalez has really taken that to heart. He swings free and easy. He looks really comfortable in the box. Teams really haven't made him look uncomfortable up there yet. But that's, you know, that's bound to change. We saw it happen with Stephen Kwan, and Kwan's the other guy who sort of was in on the mix there. 3-for-4 with an RBI, a walk, and a run. He was you know, at the center of all the controversy in this game. When he stole a base in the sixth inning and slid headfirst into second, upending Elvis Andrus, who sort of fell on top of him and sort of laid there for a moment. And Terry Francona felt that Quan was impeded or interfered with. There was some obstruction there, but home plate, or I'm sorry, second base umpire, Jeremy Rehak, didn't agree. He ruled that Quan could not advance to third after the throw skipped into the outfield, and Andrus was laying on top of the base runner. You know, frankly, I don't think Quan probably would have made it to third base because Christian Pache was charging on the play. He was there to field the ball and probably would have thrown Quan out had he gotten up and run to third without the obstruction. But Francona argued, and the umpires all got together and they agreed with Jeremy Rehak's ruling. And then Tito pretty much went around the horn made his feelings clear to each of the four umpires. And you know, he had already been sort of I don't want to say mistreated, but sort of dismissed earlier in the game by crew chief Paul Emmel, who on a ruling on a double play ball where Andrés Giménez was ruled to be ruled out at first on a sort of a bang bang play. The Guardians challenged the call. It looked on replay like Giménez was safe on the play, but the call stood. So Tito, in his post game remarks, said he gave the umpires there a piece of his mind, and then he's holding that you know, the same thing goes for the guy in New York as well, the umpire back in Secaucus, who was making the rulings on those calls as well. So you know, 45th ejection in Tito's illustrious career. You know, they're fewer and further between nowadays because of replay and who you're going to argue with. But Tito got his money's worth. He got out there, sort of gave him the business, got tossed, and but he didn't go very far. Once the Guardians were able to rally and come up as winners, you know, he was standing there up the tunnel a little bit in the handshake line, you know, giving props to the young Guardians for coming back. Also, don't want to forget Richie Palacios pinch hitting in that eighth inning and coming through with a 2-run double. Ernie Clement getting the job done in a bunt situation where he laid down a bunt, actually got it down. I mean, you know, how many times in the last 6-8 years have we seen a Guardians or, you know, a Cleveland hitter up at the plate, unable to get a bunt down in a situation that calls for it? Clement gets the bunt down, you know, close play at first. Lou Trevino throws the ball up the line. They rule it a base hit with an error on the throw, allowing Clement to reach safely. The run scores with Owen Miller coming home, and really, you know, that was the ball game there. Once they got a lead and were able to add on to it, the Guardians bullpen took care of things. Brian Shaw, Aniel Del Santos, they came in in support of Connor Pilkington. Connor Pilkington got the start and went into the sixth inning. It's 5 2/3, I believe. Gave up 4 runs, gave up 4 hits, walked 4 batters. And Tito said that he really didn't have the life on his fastball that he had had in his previous start. That was a pretty decent start. So, you know, with Aaron Civale getting the start out in Indianapolis for AAA Columbus on Thursday night, probably won't be long before Savali is back in the rotation. You know, with them pitching on the same night, this could be, you know, maybe one more start for Connor Pilkington before Savali is ready to go. I think that's probably going to be the case. Savali, I believe, hit his 50 pitch mark, pitched into the third inning, gave up a couple of runs, but those were base runners that were guys who were on base when he exited the game, and they scored later on. Couple 3 strikeouts, couple of hits. But, you know, just to be able to get back out there and throw 50 pitches probably felt pretty good for Aaron Civale. We'll definitely get a report on the outing from Tito prior to Friday's game. So that's something to look for. But in terms of, you know, just this gritty young Guardians team, this is the kind of win that, you know, Tito said, you know, nights like this are, you know, what you kind of look forward to, the learning and the growth and the building on this. And this is a momentum builder for sure, because, you know, they were down and they could have packed it in. But, you know, you get the home runs to draw even early in the game. You fight your way back and you chip away with Stephen Kwan RBI single and an Oscar Gonzalez RBI single. And then all of a sudden, you know, this is a team that in the eighth inning, they're as good as any team at scoring late in ball games. They're one of the best in the league. And it's what, their fourth time scoring four or more runs in the eighth inning or later this season. Of course, we all remember what they did in Chicago with the Josh Naylor two home runs, the grand slam, and the three-run home run to win a game there. But the last time they scored four runs in the eighth inning or later was May 30th against Kansas City. They scored four runs in the eighth. And it's the sixth time that they sent nine or more hitters to the plate in a single inning this year. That was last done May 9th. At Chicago. So just a lot of positives coming out of this. I didn't even mention Andrés Giménez with the go-ahead RBI single in that eighth inning. It was his 10th go-ahead RBI of the season already. You think about that. Think about what Andrés Giménez has done for this club already this year. I think in terms of wins above replacement on Baseball Reference, I believe that he's second only to Jose Ramirez on this team in terms of Baseball Reference WAR. So he's tied for seventh in the American League in terms of go-ahead hits. It's also his sixth career go-ahead RBI in the eighth inning or later, and his fifth this season. The last time he did that was again on May 30th against Kansas City. So. Just a lot of those little positives coming out of this game. Of course, you're doing it against an Oakland team that's 20-39. They've now lost nine consecutive games. They're 0-4 against the Guardians this season alone. And, you know, just a rough time if you're an Oakland fan. But if you're a Cleveland fan, you're looking at this as, you know, these are games that are pretty much must wins. And right now you've gotten through, you know, Pilkington starting a game for you on Thursday. You're set up the rest of the weekend with Tristan McKenzie, Zach Plesac, Cal Quantrill coming at them. So, yeah, it should be, you know, this is looking at the rest of the series. You got to take three out of four. You got to take three out of four in this if you want to, you know, stay in contention and stay competitive. Right now, the Guardians are at, you know, three games behind division leading Minnesota. I believe they're two and a half games out of a half game out of a wild card spot right now with the expanded wild card format. So just a lot of things to look at in terms of, you know, if you would have told me a month ago that this team would be in this position and had battled back from being a couple of games under 500, you know, there was no indication, there were no signs that this was the way it was going. But, you know, here and there you get a guy like an Oscar Gonzalez come up and produce for you. The starting rotation starts to round into shape and things start to look a little more positive. All right. We wanted to get into some subtexters submissions here and questions and comments. And, you know, we love talking to our subtexters on this podcast, and it's a great service that, you know, we get to interact with our readers and those who subscribe. It's cleveland.com/subtext. Or if you want to send a text to 216-298-4346. It's $3.99 a month. We text directly to your phone. Hoynsie and myself will give you all the inside information after every Tito press conference, after every time we're in the clubhouse. When we find something out, it goes to you first before we tweet it, before we post it on Cleveland.com. You hear about it. So again, Cleveland.com/subtext. Follow the links and join up so that you can hear from myself and from Hoynsie first. We love hearing from the subtexters. And I asked you guys during the game, I said, hey, we're going to do a mailbag here. What do you got for me? The first question is from Ian in Sandusky. Ian wants to know if Framil Reyes ever gets rolling this season. What do you think his long-term future is with Cleveland? And really, if you would ask me this question in spring training when he was hitting, tearing the cover off the ball, I probably would have told you this is a guy who could be another face of the franchise just with his marketability, his personality, and how approachable he is. He is the definition of the gentle giant, the big teddy bear in the clubhouse. And he's got all those intangibles. It's just that, right now, at least at this point, he is just not hitting the ball. This is a guy who should be giving you 30 home runs and 100 RBIs every year if he would be consistent. And we haven't seen that. We've seen him get as hot as any hitter in the American League when he's driving the ball to the right side of the field. But we've also seen him have epic slumps. And, I still think he's among the league leaders in strikeouts, and he hasn't played in 2 weeks. This is going to be a long process to get him back to the Framil that we've seen in the past. The guy who, hit two moonshot home runs in Detroit that I still don't think have landed. He's done a lot of things at the plate that give you a lot of hope if you're a Cleveland fan since he arrived in that Trevor Bauer trade a few years ago. But really, he needs to take that next step and be the consistent guy, not just the guy who can hit the ball 480 feet. Framil was on the field yesterday and Wednesday. On Wednesday, he was driving the ball out of the park, batting practice pitches from Victor Rodriguez. Saw him hit one up into the bleachers that landed about three rows from the top. And, looked like things were feeling good with the hamstring. He was healthy. Continued to do some agility work and some footwork out there. And Tito says maybe by the beginning of next week, when the Guardians go out on their long 9-game road trip to Colorado and LA and Minnesota, maybe we'll see Framil head out on a rehab assignment. Maybe he can join Aaron Civale with Columbus and get a few swings in there, play a few innings, maybe play some defense in the outfield as well to get his head straight. I would not be surprised if you saw Framil Reyes rejoin the Guardians possibly when that road trip ends, or maybe they're thinking a little bit longer, but it depends on how many days and games you get and you want to use in terms of your rehab. They might use every bit of Framil's rehab time to get him going and get him hot at the plate before they bring him up. That seems to be the direction that they want to go in. And to be quite honest, Oscar Gonzalez right now, you can't move him out of the spot that he's in. He's your right fielder as long as he's hitting the ball the way he is. And you're able to have that flexibility and move around Josh Naylor, Owen Miller, Jose Ramirez as your DH. That was another thing that Tito said after the game on Thursday. And it was nice to be able to DH your regular third baseman and put a guy like Ernie Clement in. And have him produce in the way that he did, getting that critical bunt down, playing some really good defense at third. You don't really lose anything when you put Clement in at third base as opposed to Ramirez. So, you know, right now in terms of where's a spot for Franmil, I don't know where you could find one. Always nice to have him back if he's hitting the way that he's supposed to be hitting, but no guarantees that he'll be doing that when he does come back. So, Ian, great question about Franmil Reyes and where he fits and what the future could hold in that regard for Franmil. Let's jump in and take one more question or one more comment here from our subtext subscribers. This one is
comes to us from
a subtexter in the 260 area code. And he just wanted to express how proud he is for Jose Ramirez and the loyalty he has shown to the Cleveland Guardians, and how thankful that the Dolan that he is that the Dolans are able to negotiate with Ramirez. He says, when I first heard Jose state that he wanted to stay in Cleveland for his entire career, I wondered if any players had helped strengthen his resolve. Carlos Santana, who loved playing in Cleveland, but had a bad experience playing in Philadelphia, and Francisco Lindor, who had some rough times in New York. Do you think either of these players could have contributed to Ramirez's decision to stay in Cleveland? And I honestly do think that, you know, both of those guys, he looked at their experiences away from this franchise that really sort of nurtured them up into the big leagues. And you know, if you look around and you think you've got it pretty good, as Jose did, there's no reason to make a change if you want to stay put. And that's exactly what he did. To his credit, he got exactly what he wanted, a commitment from the team, you know, a bit of a bigger payday. And, you know, he didn't need to be walking around with Mike Trout money or any of that kind of stuff. He wanted to be happy and taken care of, and that's what he is. And now you're seeing the results of that. You're seeing the results of his comfort and his ability to just relax and sit back and produce and play baseball and have fun. And I think nobody's enjoying it more than Terry Francona. Nobody's enjoying it more than Jose Ramirez. I think it's the perfect marriage, and we get to see him play baseball for another 7 years as long as he maintains what he's able to do right now. It should be a lot of fun. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this week's Friday edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. I'll be back with you with another edition on Monday after a long weekend. We will talk to you then.